Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to On the Couch with Dr. Michelle, right here on LA Talk Radio.
This is Dr. Michelle Cohen, and you are officially on the couch here on LATalkRadio.com, as you always are, every Friday at 11 in the morning, Pacific Standard Time, and of course, wherever you are listening to us around the world on the www. So nice to have you guys here on the couch. I have a great guest today. Well, as always, today we're talking about probably one of the most important subjects that I work on with people, and also, you know, we always talk about it. I see it every day in my personal office. Yeah, about the issues people have with communication. Oh my gosh. You know, I mean, we spend so much of our lives talking to each other, but how often are we simply running on automatic? Right? Relying on old habits and hoping for the best. Do you think you really, truly hear others? Are you tuning out a lot of people? Just kind of do-do-do. Do you rely on old habits and are you hoping for the best? Do you think we're able to really hear others? You know, as in, I hear you and speak our mind in a clear and kind way without needing to get defensive or go on the attack. This is one of the most common things that I see, especially, you know, when talking to people in couples therapy a lot of times, or family therapy. Especially if your parents are those kind of folks who kind of modeled to you poor communication style, either with you or each other or both. And of course, you're coming in to see me as an adult and you have these issues as well. Why can't I talk properly to my partner? Why does my partner get so defensive all the time? Things like that. And growing up, we always observe our parents' tone and voice level and behavioral expectations, right? So we learn how to interact, not only by how our parents act, but also by what we need to do in order to get their needs met. So if we need to scream and cry at home in order to get the things we want and communicate in a very unhealthy way, we're going to learn to do that outside the home as well. So it's really important to speak to a partner or a friend or a therapist and be open to uncovering more about the communication issues you may have. Or what you can do is read the book of my guest today. I vote for that. It's called Say What You Mean, A Mindful Approach to Nonviolent Communication. So today we're going to help you understand how to feel a little more confident during a conversation, how to stay focused on what really matters in an interaction, because a lot of us don't really know. We're going to find out how to listen for authentic concerns behind someone's words, lower your anxiety before and during difficult conversations, And just find nourishment in day-to-day interactions. What's really healthy, as we say. So let's bring up my special guest, Oren J. Sofer. And he is the author of the book, Say What You Mean. And Oren, welcome to the couch here. Nice to have you with me.
Thanks so much, Michelle. Nice to be here.
By the way, you know, I wanted to mention, folks, that Oren, you are leading so many retreats and workshops on mindful communication throughout the U.S. here.
Yeah.
You're amazing. I your blogs are so good, and your mindful meditations are wonderful. Thank you for that.
Yeah, I'll be down in L.A. Next month. We're Woo-hoo. Doing a couple events with Insight LA, I think over in Santa Monica, Thursday night talk, and then a Saturday day long. So folks can check my website if they want to come meet and hang out together some when I'm down next month in January.
What's your website so we can go? I want to go.
Absolutely. It's by donation. So, just come on by, drop in. It's orangejsofer.com. You can look online. So, but yeah, I'm happy to be here. Let's talk about how folks can improve their communication. Because as you were saying, I loved your introduction.
Thanks.
It's so true. It's really, it's this thing that we're doing all day long, every day in every area of our life. So when we can learn even one communication tool that we're able to use consistently, that's going to transform our relationships.
Yes.
And when our relationships are healthier, as we know, we feel happier, more satisfied, content. We can advance in our career. Our relationships are more healthy and satisfying.
Yes.
So really powerful lever for change.
Wow, you nailed it, exactly. And what I love about your book, Say What You Mean, is that you really cover so many aspects of communication, from the way you say things, the tone of voice, the body language, the proper listening tools, and, kind of working through a lot of psychological unresolved issues, too, which is, my deal. So that's why I really, really enjoy it. But on Oren, so you talk about the whole gamut of human communication, and it involves so much more than what we say. So what do you mean by that?
Yeah. If communication is more than what we say, and the title of the book is Say What You Mean,
there you
what's
go.
Going on there?
There you go.
Well, there's a very simple way to point this out that I think everyone can probably relate to, which is if you're having a conversation with somebody, whether it's, personally, socially, professionally, and they're saying one thing with their words, but their body or their tone of voice or their facial expression is saying something else, which do you trust?
Right.
We don't trust the smile on their face or the words they're saying. We trust that gut feeling inside that says, like, they're trying to pull one over on me, or this person doesn't like me.
Right.
We trust those other signals that we get, which are not about the words. So communication includes, as you were beginning to kind of elaborate on it, includes our body language, our facial expression, our tone of voice.
Right.
It includes what we don't say.
Oh, yes.
It includes pauses or silence. It includes our emotion, it includes how we've grown up and how we've been conditioned. And so one of the things that I like to say again and again, and I say it in the book, I say it when I teach, and it's essential to say it over and over again because we can get caught with communication training. The danger, communication training is such a wonderful and amazing gift and offering to us in our life, and it can be misused, right? Like we all know, maybe not all of us, but many of us know the experience of talking to somebody who's like just come back from a communication training or something, and they're either speaking in ways that are really weird and robotic, or they're like, they're using all these very like fancy words or making I statements or something, but you can tell they're just trying to manipulate you and run their same trip. And you're like, dude, just cut to the chase and stop trying,
Right.
So the thing that I say over and over again is that communication, as you're saying, it's not about what we say. Mm-hmm. It's about where we're coming from inside. And it's about the quality of connection and understanding that we're able to create, because that's really one of the primary, if not aims, at least mediums or functions of communication, which is to send a message and create some understanding. So that's what communication is really about.
Mm, boy, is it ever. You were talking about, the robotic thing, and I think our goal in communication is just to keep it real, to keep it caring and loving and appropriate. And really, like you say in your book, say what you mean. Try to really learn how to say what you mean without, and by the way, a mindful approach, nonviolent communication here. on the front of the book. So this is really, can you talk a little bit more about what you mean when you say nonviolent communication?
Sure. So this is pointing to two different things. So that phrase itself, you know, capitalized, nonviolent communication is a particular system of communication that was developed by a man named Marshall Rosenberg. And it's not really just a communication technique. It's a whole set of principles and practices that are designed to help us integrate the practice of nonviolence into our life more fully. And nonviolence is about, it's about not causing harm, obviously, but it's also about living in a way that recognizes the inherent dignity and value of other living creatures. And holds as a core tenet the desire to share this planet with one another in a way where there's enough for everyone.
Right.
So nonviolent communication is a whole kind of form of awareness training, really, with communication tools that's designed to help us to do this. And so that's one meaning of what nonviolent communication means. The other meaning is, you know, why nonviolent communication? Why did Marshall Rosenberg choose that, and what's going on there? So he chose the term nonviolent communication for a very specific reason, and that was to place this practice within the tradition of Kingian and Gandhian nonviolence, because he saw and understood the forces that create violence and oppression, that perpetuate hatred and racism in our society.
Yes.
He saw those as being rooted in part, if not to a great degree, in the ways in which we think, perceive, and communicate.
Yes.
And so this practice is about starting to understand where the roots of violence come from.
Right.
It's not, you know, we all know, like, okay, you have violent communication, if you're shouting at someone or threatening them, we can see that. But it gets more subtle than that in terms of the concepts that we use and how those can justify violence in terms of punishment or harming someone as a viable strategy to meet our needs.
Exactly.
So that's really,
really cool. And you explain that in your book, by the way, Say What You Mean. So it really does. And I love those principles, and I love the training you've had. Some of your influences are just lovely. Can you talk briefly about some of the folks who really influenced you to write this book?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. So, you know, the book itself it's kind of a culmination of the last couple of decades of work and training that I've done. And it integrates three different distinct yet mutually supportive practices and perspectives. And so one of them, as you've already named, is nonviolent communication. Another major one is contemplative practice, meditation, particularly mindfulness meditation. And so that was actually my first love, was learning to understand the mind.
Yes.
And ask some of the deeper questions about what it is to be alive, to be human. Why are we here? How do we find fulfillment and authenticity and, you know, really actualize our potential? There's that sense that I think we have when we slow down and look that there's something quite special and if not mysterious or even sacred about being alive. How do we stay aware of that and connected to it? And so the techniques of contemplative practice that come out of Buddhism, out of mindfulness, are another main influence and practice that informs the book and my teaching and work. And then the third, which is equally important, is what are known as somatic practices. Somatic practices mean body-based practices. You know, in spite of the prevalence of our screens and devices, we do actually live in our body, even though we might not be aware of it all the time. And, you know, communication, and particularly our psychological and emotional habits, are rooted in our nervous system. And so for any kind of real transformation, lasting change in our psychology, in our emotions, in our relationships, it needs to include and take into account the body, and particularly the nervous system patterning that's been set in place by, as you were alluding to earlier, our early childhood experiences, family, traumatic experiences. So I have a number of different forms of training in somatic healing, one particular form called somatic experiencing, which is a form of trauma. Yeah. So the three of those kind of come together in the book to bring together contemplative practice and awareness with nonviolent communication and a very embodied, grounded approach to working with what's actually happening here and now in our body.
God, it really does. That's beautifully explained as well in your book. You know, I've worked in the past, still do, you know, sometimes with law enforcement as, you know, as a body language expert. I've studied this for years. And it's fascinating to me sometimes when suspects are being interrogated and I'm watching their their body language and the way they're, you know, responding to the interrogator. And then when the interrogator leaves the room, how they, you know, walk around or what they do in their body language, things like that. Just fascinating to me. And also in communications and with couples as well, to see how they relate to each other. And, you know, it's all so very subtle. It's not a science. But we look at, you know, like you say, the clusters, you know, of movements and the facial gestures. It's survival patterns. We learn to read. And there's also that intuitive part that we need to get in touch with so we can really feel people a little bit more, not assume. So let's jump into this right now because people want to know, what can I do to start communicating a lot better? You really suggest that we focus on three steps or foundations that really we need to take in order to create effective conversation with others. So what are these three steps?
So the book is structured around these three steps and these three trainings. And so so the first of those is to lead with presence. And maybe we can talk a little bit more about that. But, you know, this means that we're here, we're showing up, we're actually paying attention enough to have a meaningful conversation. So this is the first training, and this is where a lot of the mindfulness techniques really, really come in handy. And that kind of gets us on the map. It gets us, you know, in on the map and kind of in the playing field.
Right.
Then the second step, which we've been talking about some without naming, is about our intention.
Yes.
And where are we coming from? And the training here, the guideline, is to come from curiosity and care. These are two very powerful, healthy intentions that can transform a dialogue. And what's so powerful about intention is that it is the intention, for the most part, that is shaping all of those nonverbal cues that we're giving in a conversation.
Yes, exactly.
So I always like to point out that, or in three steps to effective conversation, you know, you're talking about mindfulness and presence, you're talking about intention coming from curiosity and care. Where's the communication? It's this is a very conscious choice in my teaching and my work that, you know, two-thirds of the work isn't about the words we use. It's about, are we showing up and where are we coming from inside? So those are the first steps. And then the third step is where we start to look at the language, the words, how we listen, how we speak. And so the training here is a training of our attention. Where are we placing our attention in the conversation? And the suggestion here is that we learn how to focus on what matters. What's actually at stake here? What's going on? And how can we place our attention in a way that's going to be useful to build more understanding and move in the direction that we want to go?
Wow, that's really focusing on what matters. I think, you know, that's really one of the most difficult steps for people to, you know, get. Because we sort of have to learn how to filter out a lot of what else is going on and really focus on what really matters when you're talking to someone. What are some really important, you know, factors in learning how to understand what they're really saying and what matters in a conversation?
So, So this step of focusing on what matters has each of these steps, it's like there's a simple level to it. And, you know, this is, I enjoy this about them. You can hear it and understand it and go, oh, yeah, that makes sense, and start working with it right away. Yeah. So the first layer of what that means, focus on what matters, is that what's most important in this moment.
Yeah.
How do I actually just keep that in mind to say what's most important? And the offering here, the perspective that's offered from nonviolent communication is what's most important is not like I want to, you know, getting my way or like I want to be right. And that's what we think is most important, but that actually doesn't. How does that go? Right.
You know, like,
how does that work out for you? And that's what your aim is and that's what you're focusing on.
Right.
You know,
exactly.
Even when we get what we want, even when the other person, okay, yeah, you're right. You know, what's the result? You know, it comes at a cost often.
Yeah, it really does.
And the quality of the relationship or the level of trust or goodwill that's there. Mm. So focusing on what matters means that we understand and recognize a fundamental principle, which is that as human beings, part of what makes us human is that we all share the same basic fundamental needs. You know, and I'm not talking about, you know, the need to have a Corvette or the need for, you know, Netflix or something like that. No, those aren't needs. Those
really?
Are strategies. Those are ideas
Orin,
for how
come
to
on.
Meet needs.
Come on.
Our needs are deeper. Our needs are about the, like, another word for this is our values.
Right.
This is what matters to us in life, why we do the things we do. And this is the understanding or the view or the perspective, not just from nonviolent communication, but of humanistic psychology and many other social sciences, which is that human beings are, we're not always smart, we're not always effective, we're not always wise, but we're logically consistent in the sense that we are continually attempting to meet our needs in the same way that a plant turns towards the sunlight.
Right.
A human being, its aim, that our organism, its aim in life is to meet our needs. And that includes not just food and shelter and reproduction and things like that. It includes things like community and meaning and belonging and connection and understanding and love and contribution. These are needs. So focusing on what matters means that we're able to recollect.
Right.
We're able to remember this perspective that, okay, whatever's going on, whatever this person is saying, whatever they did, whatever I'm saying, whatever I did was rooted in some deeper, more universal, fundamental need that I share, that I can connect with. And so we want to learn, we want to be able to train our mind to remember this perspective and to be able to identify what that is, or at least start to inquire and guess. What's driving this? What's underneath the surface? Why?
Right. Exactly.
Why is this important? So that's the surface level of focus on what matters, what that means. And I'll just say one more thing on the deeper level, which is on the deeper level, what it means is that conversation is always changing. It's a dynamic, fluid process.
Right.
And so focusing on what matters means that we're working to develop the capacity to have a nimble and a flexible attention to attune from moment to moment to, okay, what's needed right now?
Yes, exactly.
In this moment, what's needed right now? And as a psychologist and a therapist, you know that this is one of the primary like works of a healer is to stay aware and attuned to the client and the patient and to say like, is it the feelings that are present that we really need to linger with and stay with the emotions? Is it what happened and starting to unpack the story?
Right.
Is it this layer of needs? Is it some action that needs to be taken? Like you need to stand up for yourself and speak up a little bit, you know?
Right.
Any of that could be what matters. And what the training is here is that we're learning to identify different aspects of experience that might be really important and tune in.
Wow.
Which one is it right now?
It's really, and this book, by the way, will help you learn how to tune in to find out really what matters and will help you with your communication. By the way, I'm talking with Orin J. Sofer. He's the author of Say What You Mean, A Mindful Approach to Nonviolent Communication. And Orin's going to be leading a retreat here. Yay, soon. We're going to be talking about that a little bit later on in the show as well in Santa Monica area. But of course, we're all over the world. So if you want to fly on, come on down, He's leading retreats and workshops on mindful communication throughout the U.S. He's a member of the Spirit Rock Teachers Council, holds a degree in comparative religion from Columbia University, and is a somatic experiencing practitioner. Love that. And a certified trainer of nonviolent communication, and creates a lot of mindfulness training programs for apps and organizations. And what is your website, Oren, so folks can check you out right this moment while we're talking?
Absolutely. My website is orenjsofer.com. That's orenjaysofer.com. And there's a much easier way to connect and stay in touch with me. And you get a bunch of free gifts, including some free guided meditations and a free book on contemplative practice, an ebook. If you sign up for my newsletter, my email newsletter, and the easiest way to do that is to send a text message to the number 44222. And just put the word guided, G-U-I-D-E-D, like guided meditation. Put that one word guided in the text message to 44222. And you'll get the link to my website and some nice free gifts from me.
Oh, that's terrific. That's really great. You know, I have regulars who listen to me and who email me questions at straighttalkdoc@gmail.com. And I'm getting some questions coming in here, and they're sort of aligning with some of the questions that I already had prepared for you. So I have one of my favorite subjects is really how people relate to each other and have empathy and can really connect to other people. So this was perfect. Because this comes from Lisa. Can I just read this to you? This is beautiful. She says, "Hey, Oren, great book, great show. Can you please help me understand how I can better talk with my sister who has been diagnosed with narcissistic personality disorder? She has zero empathy for me or everyone in the family. Can someone learn how to be empathetic?" Good question, Lisa. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Lisa. Wow. I guess the first thing I want to say is I just want to offer my my heartfelt compassion to you. That's hard. That's hard. And, you know, that diagnoses are their own kind of thing and the different takes on that. But whether or not it's accurate or true, those kinds of behaviors that one would characterize as narcissistic personality disorder, you know, particularly with a close family member, that's painful. And so I just want to take a moment to connect with you on that level and say, I'm sorry to hear that. And I just wish you a lot of strength inside.
Yes.
I think that, you know, the empathy, what you're pointing to is that what I'm hearing is one thing you're pointing to is that empathy is innate. This is a capacity that we have as human beings that's hardwired. You know, our mirror neurons in our brain are designed to connect with and literally mirror the behavior, the actions of others, including emotions.
Right.
So it is an innate capacity, but it also needs to be nurtured and fostered and developed through childhood and through experience. So even as it's hardwired, it can be developed and grow. There are unique circumstances, whether it's traumatic brain injury, learning disabilities, or other psychological disorders like narcissistic personality disorder, where that capacity gets limited.
Right.
And so the most honest answer, Lisa, is I don't know because I don't know your sister.
Right.
So
exactly.
I can't say if it's possible for her to develop empathy, but what I can say is that it's possible for you to find more balance and wholeness and acceptance inside
around the way
things are, and for you to develop more empathy for yourself. Because as I started with, that's a really hard situation. And the more you're able to recognize and understand the limits of that relationship and her limits emotionally, psychologically, relationally, that will, I think, relieve some of the pressure. And you know, if you haven't already, which I would imagine you have, you know, that will involve some sadness and some mourning and probably some raging. And, you know, there's a lot of emotions that come connected to that in a sibling relationship. And more you're able to work through those emotions and come to a place of recognition and acceptance around who she is and what she can and can't offer you in the relationship, you will be able to start to relate to her in a different way. And that's probably your best bet. Mm-hmm. You know, the more you can stay balanced and loving and patient and set appropriate limits and boundaries, I'm not talking about being nice all the time, the more likely it is that she will begin to respond differently in the face of that kind of consistent, loving, yet firm availability.
Beautifully said, Oren. Thank you so much. And thank you, Lisa, for emailing us here at straighttalktalk@gmail.com on the couch. I really appreciate that. Beautiful question. And I didn't mean to throw you that one, Oren, but I mean, it's perfect.
I love questions.
Oh, no, you're great. And you do talk a lot about empathy. And in your second step, in order to helping, you know, folks and really get their communication skills nailed down, you say we should come from curiosity and care. And within that, you know, we talk about all different styles, people who may have, you know, a lack of awareness about how they're affecting other people and certain, you know, personality disorders and things like that. But so in your book, you talk about something that I see a lot. It's people who have, you know, who really engage in a lot of conflict and they have competitive confrontation and they also have, you know, passivity. They're very passive aggressive sometimes. You know, these are really unhealthy ways, you know, of coping with trying to communicate with someone. What do you think are the deeper roots of some of these ways of communicating?
I think to a large degree, a lot of these patterns of whether we approach conflict by, you know, going on the attack, which is the competitive response, giving up, rolling over, the passive response, avoiding it altogether. That's the other one you didn't mention, the sense of like, oh, everything's fine. Yeah, everything's fine.
Right.
Just like pretending, you know, just try to avoid it at all costs, conflict avoidance. Or the fourth one that you mentioned, this passive aggression, which is this very kind of interesting, slippery combination of on the surface, we're pretending that everything's fine, but underneath there's this veil, this very thin veil of hostility and aggression.
Yes.
Often these are formed earlier in life, or they're rooted in childhood in the ways that we've been able to get our needs met and the kind of beliefs that are formed. And so I think, you know, the two key points is each one, and I go into this in the book into more detail, but each one is, again, human beings are logically consistent in the sense that we're always trying to meet our needs. So these are not evil behaviors.
Right.
It's the best we could do to get our needs met. So each of these is trying to meet different sets of needs, you know? So the competitive confrontation is basically like, I'm going to get my needs met at any cost.
Right.
I'm really focused on like, I need to get make sure I'm okay.
Right.
You know, the passive response is trying to meet a different need. The passive response often is focused on maintaining harmony, right? It's like, I'm actually going to give up my needs or certain ones of my needs and preferences in order to maintain a sense of connection to make sure that I belong.
Sort of like people-pleasing, right?
Yeah, that's another one, is that sense of appeasing, you know, giving up what I want to make someone else happy.
Sure.
So we're trying to, these are rooted in, number one, trying to meet certain needs. And the other thing that they're rooted in are certain core beliefs.
Mm.
You know, certain ideas that we've picked up through experience that made sense at the time, because that's what everything was telling us, which might no longer serving us, you know, beliefs like I'm on my own. If I don't fight for it, I'm going to lose my power, or beliefs like my needs don't matter. I don't deserve to be happy, or I've done something wrong. I don't have a choice, or there's no space for me. No one else cares.
Right.
So starting to examine on a deeper level, what do I actually believe to be true in conflict and difference with other human beings? And then seeing the value of those beliefs, what it gets us, it does something for us, and the limits.
Right.
What are we left without?
Right.
So that we can start to evaluate, is this still serving me, and do I need to reconsider and try not only another approach, but another way of looking at things?
Right. So healthy to do that. And the passive aggressiveness that you talk about, it is fascinating in your book. And I find that that comes sometimes from, that's the only coping survival skill that someone may have learned, in their early environment is going to avoid it. But on the other hand, I don't want the conflict, but I do want to let them know that I'm really angry. And, it comes from you feeling out of control, feeling not heard. So I'm going to be passive aggressive. And I see this a lot in couples' relationships as well.
Yeah. It also comes from passive aggressive. Each of these has its own strength.
Sure.
And each of them has its own limitation. And, one of the strengths of passive aggression is a certain kind of creativity, actually, and the ability to stay connected to one's needs in a situation in which it's difficult or unlikely for them to get met. And so that's actually really important. It's really valuable that we recognize, I don't think this is going to, I can get what I want, but I'm still connected to and committed to what's important to me. And so there's a real strength in that.
Mm-hmm. There really is. It's really important. By the way, in case you just tuned in here, you're on the couch with Dr. Michelle. My special guest here is Oren J. Sofer. He's the author of the book, Say What You Mean, A Mindful Approach to Nonviolent Communication, How to Find Your Voice, Speak Your Truth, and Listen Deeply. And the rest is up to you guys. This is a great book, and it covers so many facets of communication and also has a bit of a spiritual taste in it, which also relates to, understanding ourselves and including being compassionate, having empathy, allowing all of those cool principles. Which come with humility and being patient and all those things that we sort of need to learn in order to understand others as well and speak in a caring way, leading with presence. And one of the other big things we talked about a bit earlier, which will be up and available here in the archives on the show when we get out the air, is, leading with presence, listening, really acting like you're listening to someone else. And I see this a lot, Oren, with couples. Like you said, in the robotic kind of sense where I have my handouts and I say, now let's talk, let's communicate. What do you need to communicate today or the needs you need to communicate? And it is interesting, when they're using the I statements or I feel or it seems to me the observer statements and, things like that. It's good training, and you suggest we speak in certain ways in this book as well. So, guys, if you want to get a hold of this book, it's Oren J. Sofer, OrenJaySofer.com. And you can find out more about Oren and the way he leads retreats all over the country, workshops, mindful communication. And he'll really help you in your relationship. You were about to say something.
Curious, you're talking about the couples you work with and sort of the, kind of using the form, but not really having the deeper intention present. It's an interesting phenomenon though, because one of the things, there's that phrase that we hear sometimes, fake it till you make it. And on the one hand, even though I emphasize so much and so consistently, communication is not about what you say. It's about where you're coming from. Make sure your intention is on point.
Right.
Are you being genuine? Those are essential, there's something to be said for, there's a difference between a training tool and using a certain form or speaking in a certain way to train our mind. And being robotic, and there's great value in, I think there can be great value in using some of these communication technique things in a structured environment like a therapy session or a class or something where there's an agreement to be doing that, because even if we don't mean it or feel it, what we're doing is we're helping our mind start to learn how to focus our attention in a different way, because our words, the words we speak, the words we think with, start to shape our experience and our reality. So even when we don't feel something or mean something when we say it, if we're doing it with a with an interest in learning, with an exploratory spirit, it opens the possibility for us to begin to understand things or see things in a different way.
Right. It really does. And I so many people are, when I see again in my practice, are really, they want to be heard and they want to get their point across, like you said. They want to get their needs met. And so there is, you know, it's like an urgency and a desperation of like, you've got to listen to me. And, you know, there's just really unhealthy, you know, communication patterns going on. Some people are really naughty to the other partner.
Yeah. And, you know, one of the best ways of handling some of that, of what you just said, and you touched on a number of really important things in that, you know, last thing you said, of both not just the urgency that we might feel to be heard or to get our point across, or but also like how to stay grounded when other people are being really reactive or speaking to us in ways that are painful or difficult. I want to come back to that first principle, that first step of leading with presence.
Okay.
And because it's so foundational and the benefits are so immense, you know, not only when we're able to be here, not only does that lay the ground for having more connection and understanding in a conversation, but the more aware we are, the more choice we have.
Right. Right.
So presence and mindfulness, it gives us the capacity to choose how we're living, how we respond to someone instead of reacting.
Yes.
Stay more grounded in those difficult moments. And, you know, I like to mention with communication that, one of the things that we're working against, it's not just that we're working against our own habits,
right,
our own our own patterning. You know, that's true. And that's really, it's one of the key things that we're working to transform. But we're all, most of us, and indeed probably everyone listening to this show, we're living a particular time in history, and we're living in a particular society in which things are moving at an incredibly fast pace.
Right.
The whole kind of process of life is incredibly disembodied.
Yes.
And there's, because of the influence of technology and the sense of the pace and the disembodiment, there's a profound fragmentation of our attention.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everything is just next, 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 this, this, that, and kind of split. And so, all three of those, the pace, the disembodiment, the fragmentation of attention, those make it really hard to have effective communication, because communication, by definition, it takes time.
Right.
We have to be here.
Right.
We have to focus some. So leading with presence, learning to be able to be here in a sustained, balanced, and grounded way,
right,
starts to counter those forces. Those societal forces of the pressure and the rush and the fragmentation and the virtual realities that are so much part of modern life.
Gosh, you said it perfectly. One of the most common things I hear, and I know you hear this as well, are, what did he mean by this when he texted me? Or what do you think that she's really saying in this text? You know, there's always...
Yeah.
Because it's where we're coming from, no matter how we're feeling about ourselves or our lives or whatever, we're going to project onto our translation of a text or an email. We are going to assume what other people are saying without hearing the tone, without looking at someone in the eye, without seeing their body language, without really clarifying. This just drives me absolutely crazy, because sometimes we spend so much of our session in talking about or trying to analyze what someone really meant in their text. It's like, pick up the phone, call them, ask them, and sit down with them in a cup of coffee or something and say, hey, what did you mean by that? Don't assume.
It's such an important point, Michelle, and you know, it's amazing how hard it is to not just remember but actually do it. And I think, again, it's because things are happening, moving so fast, and everyone's so kind of efficiency focused. It's like, get to the point, what do you want, what do you need?
Exactly.
that we, you know, we forget that not just text messaging, but, you know, email, these written technological forms of communication are completely tone deaf.
Mm-hmm.
It's
yeah.
very difficult, if not impossible, to tell what's actually going on for someone. And I've learned, I'm sure we all have experienced the hard way.
Mm-hmm.
When there's any emotional charge, when there's any emotional content to these communications,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. as you said, pick up the phone, try to get together in person. Don't try to have the conversation and the negotiation over email or text message, because it's far, far more difficult to be effective and to develop, to establish understanding.
Oh, well said. By the way, in case you just tuned in here, guys, you're on the couch with me, Dr. Michelle, my special guest today, Orin J. Sofer. And I'm holding in my hands a beautiful book here he's written. It says, Say What You Mean, A Mindful Approach to Nonviolent Communication. And it's really teaching us how to find our voice, speak our truth, and listen deeply to others. And it's very comprehensive about all aspects of communication. And it's a comfortable, easy read. It's a real page turner. Because you want to learn more. Oh, yeah, but this is what I do, and how can I clean that up? You know, it's interesting. I think also there is a fine line. You know, we want people to be authentic in their communications. We want them to be kind. We want them to use your, you know, three steps to learn how to communicate better. We want the flow. We want the sort of organic exchange going on and not blurting. But then we tell people as well to think about what we're going to say before we say it, because it's really important to sort of, and your book really helps people clarify that. But do you find that it's difficult sometimes for people to really kind of know how to navigate that, be organic, authentic, not blurting, and but at the same time, think about what you're going to say before you say it?
Yeah, well, you know, there's a lot going on there, right?
Yeah.
So it is a balance, as you say, and it takes practice. That's why it's training. It's accessible, and, you know, I think the key is, because communication is so complex, there's so much going on. There's emotions, there's context, there's history. There's, you know, there's the intention and the nonverbal communication. There's the subtext. There's our own projections and perceptions. It's just very rich terrain. But because of that, and because human beings are so complex, the best way to actually create lasting change is through small incremental shifts.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that we need to be able to, like, do everything all at once and be perfect at it. That's actually not even possible.
Right.
But instead, if we just focus on taking one tool or one perspective or principle and trying to remember it and integrate it and work with it, that will have an effect over time. And to go back to where we started from earlier in the hour, you know, because communication is so central to our life, because we're doing it almost all of the time with everyone in every area of our life, if we're able to take even just one small tool or principle, but really make, really integrate it and make it second nature, that's going to start to transform and shift all of our relationships, all of our conversations, and the quality of the connection that we have there.
Right.
I want to build on the question that you just asked, Michelle, and kind of, because part of what you're pointing to is that, you know, the part of, like, well, think about what you want to say beforehand. You know, the title of the book, this sense of say what you mean, right? Well, how do you do that?
Right.
It's not just about blurting out whatever the first thing that comes to mind is, you know.
Yeah. exactly.
But to say what we really mean, we first have to know what we mean.
Yes,
and
exactly.
And that means that we have to look.
Yes.
We actually have to step back. We have to pause and consider and really look inside, and not just take the thought that's there on the surface, or the emotion, or the impulse that's there on the surface. Oftentimes it's not really what we mean.
Right.
There's some truth to it,
sure,
but that's a reflection of something that's probably not fully articulated or clear in consciousness. And so, a lot of the tools in the book are designed not just for the conversation and the communication and the relationship, but for us to be able to be clear in ourselves about what's true for me.
Right.
How do I really feel? Why? What's important to me?
Exactly.
What do I want to ask for? What would be really helpful to have now in this moment, in this relationship with this person? What did really happen that I'm so upset about? Not the story I'm telling, or, you know, so to be able to learn how to investigate and refine our attention one step at a time, slowly, not only does that help to make our conversations and our relationships more meaningful and effective and joyful and satisfying, but on a deeper level, it's going to transform our relationship with ourselves, because we start to have a clearer sense about what's really important to us, what's going on, and it's very empowering.
Yes,
we develop a much richer sense of autonomy and agency and effectiveness when we know inside what we mean.
Boy,
that we're able
true.
To say it. We're
That's
able
right.
to engage with others, but more importantly, we're able to be aware of that in ourselves. And when we're aware of that, when we're aware of what matters, when we know what we need and why, we have a lot more options, a lot more choice and flexibility in our life
Perfectly
to go
said.
About meeting our needs.
Perfectly said. Oren, we're going to have to wrap, and I thank you so much for being on the show today. And
You're
sharing
welcome.
Your wise, you know, helpful hints and information about your book, Say What You Mean, A Mindful Approach to Nonviolent Communication. Oren J. Sofer, you can check him out, orenjsofer.com. And, of course, his book is available everywhere on Amazon and wherever you prefer to buy your books. You know, it's the best, really one of the best communication books I've read in a very long time. So thank you so much for being here on the couch with me.
Thanks so much for having me, Michelle.
All
Have
right.
a great day.
All right, Oren. Take good care now. All right, guys, the show will be up in the archive as soon as we get off the air. I'll have a little bit more in detail about how to help yourself communicate better, say what you mean, and find your voice. All right, guys, thanks for listening here, and more great shows coming up here on LA Talk Radio. And next week, we're going to talk about sort of dealing with losses in our life. That's one of the most difficult things that I work with in my daily practice, but it'll help you out a lot. All right, thanks for listening, guys. Take care of yourself first. You'll be great for others if you do. Bye-bye.